Today's podcast is sponsored by RadRx, your source for quality online education for interventional and diagnostic radiology coding, taught by subject matter expert Stacy Buck. For more information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Struggling to learn interventional radiology coding? If so, RadRx has the perfect solution for you. Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology online training program. In this program, interventional radiology coding expert Stacy Buck breaks down the complexities of interventional radiology coding in easy-to-understand terms so you can grasp this complex specialty. Through her course, Stacy has assisted many coders with little or no interventional radiology coding experience in successfully passing the CIRC exam on the first attempt. For additional information and testimonials, visit RadRx.com. Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says, a podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level. And now, here's your host, Stacy Buck.
Welcome to Who Cares What Stacy Says. I am your host, Stacy Buck. In today's episode, I continue my conversation with YouTube phenom Victoria Moll of Contempo Coding. I want to begin by extending a big thank you to Victoria for sharing the last episode with her audience. Thanks to Victoria, Who Cares What Stacy Says raced up the podcast charts to number 60 in the careers category. I was totally blown away. So thank you so much, Victoria. And I want to welcome all of my new listeners. I hope you will continue to tune in to future episodes. Today, in part two of my interview with Victoria, Victoria provides additional tips for building a successful YouTube channel. Additionally, we both discuss the freedom that comes with being your own boss and creating sources of passive income. We also discuss the challenges of being a content creator, including dealing with copycats and online trolls. Victoria also shares the most important lessons she has learned in her career, and we wrap up with a discussion on how to avoid some common pitfalls when using humor to connect with an audience. And now here's part two of my interview, Lights, Camera, Content with Victoria Moll. So for someone who, you know, they want to go a step above using their phone, they're like, okay, I could start on my phone, but I want to do something a little bit better quality. Like, what are some recommendations for like that starter equipment that they would want as far as an inexpensive camera, inexpensive microphone, things of that nature, if they just want to take it up a little bit, but not go full blown into that full, you know, production, you know, studio, like you probably have going on there with all the bells and whistles? Like, what are just some of the lesser expensive options that are out there on the market?
Lesser expensive options. So there's some great webcams now that shoot at 1080p, which is what you want for most of the stuff that you do on YouTube. I think I'm trying to remember what the names of some of the webcams are. Logitech usually makes some more high-end ones. I know there's one that they've made that was out of stock for a huge amount of time after the pandemic because it was just so much in stock. Everyone was buying webcams, and of course they wanted the top Logitech ones. When you talk about cameras, there's usually two very easy starter cameras. They're not super budget friendly, but usually people say the Canon M50 or the Sony ZV-1. And the Sony ZV-1 is what I have. It's not cheap though. I think it was like $700 or $800.
Yeah, that's not for a starter.
not for a starter. Aside from just using your phone, I don't think there's really a lot in between the phone and getting a good flip camera. Mm-hmm. I would say, I mean, even right now, there's probably going to be some Black Friday deals on some point and shoot type cameras. I would just look out for how they can integrate into, if you want to use it for a webcam too, like the camera that I'm shooting on now, I alternate it. It serves as my webcam and it serves as the camera that I switch for recording my YouTube videos, so I angle it depending on wherever I am sitting. Mm-hmm. So I think just about anything can do the trick right now, but depending on what camera you have, invest the time in learning the different functionalities of it, because there's certain settings that you can set have for each camera that's going to make things look a little bit better, or, you know, lighting that you can have for your cameras that's going to make it look a little bit better. Like my camera has a setting, and I'm going to fully confess that I always have it on, that it smooths out my skin whenever I'm recording video.
Okay, so that is one of your secrets that I wanted to like ask you about, because when I watch your videos, I look at you and I think, oh my goodness, her skin is flawless. Like what are her makeup secrets? What are her lighting secrets? Because when you interviewed me for your YouTube channel several months ago, when I finished that video and I watched it back, I said, oh my gosh, I need two things. One, I need better lighting. And two, I think I need some Botox. Like seriously, that's how I felt like after that interview. So that's what I wanted to know. I don't have any special lighting in my home office. You're seeing me right now sitting in, Victoria and I are seeing each other on camera while we're talking. So you see me sitting in my home office right now. I have no lights on in my office. I just have the window blinds open in the back. So you see this light coming and streaming in. Normally I have one, my overhead light is on. Oh my goodness. So I feel like overhead lighting is really, really bad, but that's all I have in my office is overhead lighting. So how do you get that? I mean, obviously what you put around your camera is going to play into that, but for background lighting, like how do you get the best look? Because again, I think you always look amazing. And I'm like, she looks like she's 20 years old. Like when you look on YouTube, like I do when I use a Snapchat filter, I never, you know, look, I'm almost 50. So I'm like, I need these secrets. I need to know how to like make myself look younger when I'm on camera.
Yeah. Well, actually, if you follow me on Instagram, I do post a lot of stuff that's just like unfiltered, makeup free, like stories and things about whatever I'm doing on the day. So there is a stark contrast between the, you know, no makeup look Victoria versus when I'm done up because I'm about to record a video. And actually on the topic, it's interesting. I had to spend quite a bit of time learning about makeup tactics while I was starting to record videos. Because while I know like the basics of how to put my makeup on, I didn't really know if basic makeup was the same as camera ready makeup and like what I should do as far as camera ready makeup. At the time I started, I wasn't using eyeliner. I don't have any on today because we're just doing the podcast and no one's going to look at me. But I had to learn like eyeliner and how much to put on. When I started out, I had just learned about like highlighter for makeup. And I'm like, oh, this is great. This is so sparkly and everything. This is going to make me look fantastic. Not realizing that when a light is shining directly on you because you're recording a video, that it's going to enhance all that highlighter. And instead of looking like all shiny and shimmery and glowy, I looked like a greased pig on camera. And I'm like editing back and I'm like, okay, tone it down for next time. But it's funny, there's not a lot of videos that tell you about like how to do your makeup for recording videos. I kind of had to learn it a little bit along the lines and got my Etsy packs now coming every month. And I had to make a lot of trips to like Ulta to buy things and try it out. So that was one aspect that I had to work on. As far as lighting, I have a couple of lighting options. I started out with just a small stand ring light where I can clip my phone on and then there's a ring on there as well. What I use for recording, and eventually I might upgrade. I just don't have the space to put one of those big professional photography lights in my small office, but I use just a stand up ring light. It's I think maybe $80 or something for a good tall ring light. And then it has a little screw on top that you can clip on your camera, or you can clip on a little extender that I have and that you can clip your phone onto it. The ring lights are good. The only problem with the ring lights is that if you have a ring light and you have glasses, you're gonna see that reflection of the ring light in your glasses. You also will see the reflection of the ring light depending on how it's angled and stuff in your eyes. And I've had people comment like, what the heck is with your eyes? I'm like, it's the ring light. That's just the reflection of the light. It's not anything. But what I'm using right now as I'm sitting in front of my computer is I have what's called a key light. And it's basically like a light that's the size of a sheet of paper. It's attached to a clamp. So it's clamped to the back of my desk and it just reflects light on me. I have, I think, a remote for it somewhere, but I can increase the intensity of it. I can change it between a cool light versus a warm light. So that is a really good option to have the key light, because then it's just right on me. And right now I actually have a ring light off to the side so that there's a little bit extra lighting, just kind of not so intense just on my face, but also coming in at an angle. It's funny, I was actually recording yesterday at a professional studio. I'm recording some promotional content for my top affiliate. We're putting together this kind of like masterclass. And he's like, I don't know. He's in California. I'm in Pennsylvania. So he's like, well, tell me where you are and I'll find a studio. And I'm like, okay. So he's like, I found this one. It's out near almost halfway to Philly, I guess. And he's like, yeah, so these are the people where this is the shoot we're going for. He's like, they're not doing your makeup. So you have to do your makeup and your hair before you go. And we went over like wardrobe options. It sounds impressive. It's really not. I get there and it's just this house. And I'm like, okay, a lot of people have studios in their house. I'm like, but this looks like very house-ish. And I'm just being sent to like this arbitrary location. It's like way back in the woods.
It's like, what kind of videos do you shoot here?
Right. I'm like, this is way back in the woods, like an unmarked wood roads that I'm going through where I'm like, oh my gosh, like I'm about to fall off the side of this road if someone comes up the other end of it. And I call them. I'm like, I think I'm here. Is this where it is? Is it a white house with blue shutters? Yep, I'll come out. And they're like, hi, I'm so-and-so. This is where we record. We have our studio down here. He's like, come on in. He goes, these are my parents. They own the house. We have the studio set up in the basement. And I'm like, all right, this is it. This is the end of Victoria. I'm about to be drugged and sex trafficked, but I've been led down into the studio basement. But yeah, it was interesting because they had all the different cool cameras and we were shooting at multiple angles and they had the big, you know, photography lights and the big, huge boom mic. And I'm like, oh my God, this is cool. And I'm like trying to say things to make them make it sound like I know what I'm talking about. I'm like, yeah. So I shoot with the Sony ZV-1. I know the term aperture. That's a thing. I know a 50 millimeter lens. Yeah. That's...
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I think it would be cool to upgrade the lighting at some point, but I think the key lights and stuff, and you can find small ones too. They're a great add-on to just clip onto the back of your desk.
Yeah. So I have the webcam that I'm using right now, it is just one that sits like on, you know, my desktop that I plug in USB, you know, webcam. It has a light around it and it has different settings for the light. I find when I put that light on, it just like, I don't know, when it hits my face, like it washes it out and it just doesn't quite work for whatever reason. I don't know why that is. So I'll try like a bigger like ring light and see if that works. Like I would lean more towards, if I was going to do more video content, I'm just more self-conscious of how I look on video because I'm doing more meetings like on video and I'm doing coding roundtables on video and I don't like the way I'm looking on the video. I would like to have like photography lighting, like in my office, like ideally, and just have it set up because when you go get your picture taken from a professional photographer, you sit under the lighting and you look flawless. I mean, yeah. The way they, you know, light you up and it's amazing. So I may at some point just go full on, like invest in that because again, I'm so self, people are like, you look fine. Don't, I'm like, I know. I spend so much time looking at myself, like when I'm on video. Today, I look decent. I feel like I look okay, like on this video. I'm like, not bad, Stacey. But see, it's because I have the bright lighting behind me that's doing it with the combination of the overhead lighting. Again, that goes back to photography lighting and what it does and how it kind of, you know, does its thing. But anyway, okay, so I want to ask you a few more questions about the YouTube channel. So how do you come up with content ideas? I mean, I know for the podcast, when I was doing solo episodes, now that I have guests, it's not as difficult, but I would struggle to come up with content ideas. And that's a lot of why when people said, Stacey, you should do a YouTube, I didn't want the pressure of having to come up with content on a regular basis. That was really the biggest hindrance. So how do you come up with content ideas? Because you're always doing so many videos. And so I know one is like ask, you know, me anything. So that's dependent upon the audience, but you know, how do you keep coming up with fresh new content?
So I used to do a very paper process and now I've moved on to more of a cloud-based, like I just use Google Drive. I have a big document in my Google Drive that says content ideas. It's got about 200 lines on it right now. Wow. And what I do is, as I'm online and I see people having conversations in, you know, the little Facebook groups that I lurk in or whatever, and they're like, oh, I'm just having such a hard time with XYZ topic, it gets added to the content list. I do some keyword research. So I have tools that I use, and I don't want to disclose too much, but I have some tools that I use that give me information on things that people are searching for. So I type in medical coding, and it'll tell me all the different terms that people are searching with medical coding. What is medical coding? How do I become a medical coder? Can you do medical coding from home? What is the salary of a medical coder? So I take all of that information, put it into the content ideas, because that is things I know people are searching for. So if they're searching for that and my video pops up, it's going to get a lot more views. And then kind of like what happened to your friends, once they've watched one video, it's going to keep recommending that they do more. So that's where I come up with a lot of my content ideas. And then the next step in that process is, as I go through, I either check off the ones that I do or I'm in process of, and I've developed a template. So now that I've kind of been doing this for a while, I've got my flow, I've got my rhythm, I know what I typically include. I have a template so that that content idea then goes onto the template. And then I start planning out what I'm going to do, not in scripted, but like bullets. And then I've started making sure that I even encompass things like, is there a story about this that I can include? Is that, what's the hook? Like, what do I want them to be hooked on in that first couple of sentences that I say? And even the thumbnail. A lot of people underestimate how important a good thumbnail image is, because that's what people see. And they also see it on their phones, like super tiny. So you have to have something that's visually attractive that people want to click on. And that doesn't have a ton of text on it, because if you're putting 10, 15 words on a thumbnail that people are looking at on their phone, they're not going to be able to read that.
Right.
And the other thing I've seen people do is, you know, the interviews like we're doing now are very popular. A lot of people are putting out content like this, but they're recording it on Zoom, and then they're just taking a capture from the Zoom and putting it at this, the thumbnail. Well, people are in Zoom meetings so much anymore, they don't want to click on something that looks like another damn Zoom meeting.
Exactly.
So just figuring out how you can, and I, because of my web design background, even think about things like complementary colors. Like if I'm in the thumbnail wearing a red shirt, what color should be in the background of the thumbnail? And what am I highlighting? Am I highlighting my red shirt? Am I highlighting a piece of text? Am I holding something up that I want people to look at? Like, what is the highlighting colors of what I'm doing?
Gotcha. So one more question about your lighting. So I'm like seeing you like with your lighting. So the lighting that you have behind you, that's like blue, like purplish, like that's how it looks on my end. What is that background lighting? And is that part of the whole ambiance? Is that a factor in how you look on camera? Or is it just something that you have on because it's cool?
It's a popular thing right now. I picked this up because when I started out, I watched a lot of video gaming content, because that was very popular. They're very engaging. So I wanted to see what kind of elements I could take away from what was being produced there and put into what I was producing. So I saw a lot of them that had these LED lights. You see this a lot on TikTok too, in videos that people have these different LED lights and they can change the colors of them. And I had wanted some of these strip lights, and I showed them, I think Elgato, I think, makes them, and they're very expensive. And I showed them to my boyfriend. He's a mechanical engineer. And I'm like, hey, I said, I want to buy these. I said, I think I should get maybe three for each corner. He's like, I can make those. I can make those for like $20.
Nice. Nice.
So he basically got some wooden sticks and got some LED strips, glued them on, and then got whatever the electronical things he needs to do to put a plug on it, and designed all of these lights for me. So yeah, he works for me actually now part-time as my IT guy.
And he helped me
do lighting like that. So it's a cool ambiance. I think in the background, it is a little bit different, I think, than some of the other content that's going out there. You know, a lot of people I've seen, you know, that are great speakers, phenomenal educators, but they think that, oh yeah, because I can take my Zoom meeting now and record it as a webinar and upload it to YouTube, everyone's going to watch this. And as great of a piece of content that is, people aren't going onto YouTube to watch webinars. So you have to have some sort of more professionalism. And actually, to be honest, like if you just want to go out there and produce content and be like, I want to help people out without that, you know, goals of monetization or growing or that, you know, like that's fine. If that's your goal, that's your goal. Mm-hmm. Awesome. But if you're someone who is like, I would like to pick up some professional affiliates, I would like to get some, be more marketable towards that, then mm-hmm. that's when you kind of have to have the professional editing, or, you know, I do my own editing. So learn how to do the right. editing, have the lights in the background, learn to make sure that you aren't presenting yourself with a big messy desk in your background. Right. Like that's the type of things that, companies will look at and go, yes, this is something that I want this person to promote my product. And I don't take all the promotions that come my way. I've had people that come to me and they're like, oh, you know, we are a company that sells earplugs. And we think that medical coding was the same as other coding, like programming. And they're like, oh, we have mm-hmm. these for coders and programmers. Do you want to test them out and you can become an affiliate? And I tried them and I'm like, these are uncomfortable in my ear. They were in like Russian, the instructions. So I'm like, no, thank you. This isn't something I think is going to do well for my audience. I've had people that came to me for like furniture pieces for office wear, but everything was not the same aesthetic that I have my office in. So I'm like, I can't promote something mm-hmm. That I wouldn't put in my office.
Right. Yeah. I definitely like understand that for sure. So, you know, really the key is, you know, like you were saying earlier, get started with like what you have, but then as you're growing and you're getting more subscribers, then you want to start investing in the better equipment and the better lighting mm-hmm. and take that production level up so you can have better monetization with your YouTube channel for sure. And again, some people may not get into it. Like the stories that I love the best, and this can occur in any business where you have people that just find their passion and they do something that they're passionate about and they just put their energy into it for that reason alone. And they don't care whether or not they make money. And then they make hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars off of ideas just because they pursued their passion and they did it for right. fun. Like, I absolutely love, love, love to hear those stories. And that's really what you're doing. I have no doubt that you can achieve the $1 million mark at some point with what you're doing. I mean, it may not happen in, you know, 2 years or 5 years, but I think that it's definitely doable there as you grow your YouTube channel, as you develop, you know, more products and things of that nature. I'm a big fan of looking at the sources of the passive income, the residual income, as you know, and making more money and working less. And people, you know, when you say that to people, they look at you like you have two heads. And I'm like, it's absolutely possible, right? Have you not found that?
Right. And I'm like, and when people are telling me like things now, I'm like, is the goal not to work as little as possible? Like, I'm not crazy, right? Like if your options are work more or work less, would you not want to work less? And actually, you know, one of the questions that you came up with that we were considering discussing, I kind of want to talk about, I used to have this boss and she was very career oriented, very like, you know, she told me at one point, I will never forget this. She told me that, you know, I was working as the supervisor, possibly wanting to move into a director position down the role at that point. At that point, I no longer want to do that. I'm not meant for management at all. But she was like, yeah. So she's like, if you want to be in management and you want to be having these great career aspects, she's like, you have to understand you're going to be working 60 hours a week. You're going to be sitting in meetings and not be able to go to the bathroom. She's like, let me tell you this one time, I missed my brother's wedding because Jayco was coming. And then a couple months later, my brother died. And sometimes you're not going to be able to make it to your kids' baseball games or whatever. I'm like, This isn't the tale that you think you're spinning right now. This is swaying me off completely.
Exactly. Exactly.
This isn't the tale of, oh yeah, don't forget you're going to have to sacrifice and do all this to get ahead. I'm like, no. These are the things that I don't want to do. I don't want to miss things for my daughter. I don't mm-hmm. want to miss out on having people at my wedding. My mom died at 63 years old of pancreatic cancer. She had cancer. She was only retired for like a year and didn't even get to enjoy her retirement. Like, mm-hmm. why am I going to bust my butt
right.
working 60 hours a week when I know by the time I'm like in my 60s and 70s, I'm not going to be probably in the shape to enjoy mm-hmm. things.
Right.
I'd rather enjoy them now. I'd rather, you know, I have a very modest living style. I still have, you know, I bought my car new, but I'm not buying a new car every 2-3 years. I live in a semi-attached home. It's very lovely for what I do. I could throw a ton of money in it to repair the things that I want, or I could buy a bigger house right now. But instead, I'm going to blow a ton of money at Disney next week because
right.
my kid still thinks hanging out with her mom is cool. And I don't know if when I'm 70 years old and possibly retired, if I'll be in the shape to even go out and travel. So I'm going to enjoy my money now on right. things that I want to do while I can still enjoy them, still be there, still be present for my daughter. Because she's going through a lot of stuff right now. She's 9 years old. She's on the autism spectrum. She's at that point where she's realizing that like she's different from other kids. She's struggling a lot. I got a call from the school the other week. They're like, someone punched her during recess. I'm like, are you kidding me? Are you absolutely kidding me? And I want to enjoy what I have now. So I still work a lot, but I work at a much slower pace than I used to.
Right.
So I'll work sometimes in the morning and then again in the evening, but I'm there now for all of the things that I need to be. And I'm not interested in the rat race anymore. I'm not interested right. in, oh, squander all of your money because, you know, then you're going to have a huge retirement when you're 65. Like I'm not counting on being around at 70, 75 years old. You know, a few years after my mom died of pancreatic cancer, her brother died of pancreatic cancer. Like, do I want to put away money for retirement? Yes. But I would rather have a decent amount of money for retirement, but also spend some on things I'm enjoying now, have the time to enjoy the things I'm doing now.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, people listen to my podcast, they've heard my story. I've talked about it where I used to be that workaholic, you know, constantly 50, 60 hours a week. And then I was very involved in the professional. Like I had no life outside of work and volunteering in the professional association. And then when I was ill and I couldn't work and was bedridden for 8 months, that really shifts how you look at things. It's like, I'm making all this money, but I'm not really enjoying myself. I don't really have quality relationships because I'm always, you know, working. And then when you go through something that's like, so, you know, it's traumatic. It was a traumatic experience, like what I went through. I mean, when I tell people the story of what I went through, they're kind of horrified and they feel sorry for me that I went through it. It was the worst time of my life. I wanted to die. Honestly, I wanted to. So I've been at as low as like anybody, you know, could be. And then when I came out of that, I shifted my priorities. I knew that I didn't want to be that way anymore. And I think culturally, we're seeing a shift in society where people are looking at that work-life balance and the quality of life. I mean, I know years ago, people would wear like that work of like 50, 60 hours a week, like a badge. Like this is like their badge of honor that this is what they do. But it's like, what are you sacrificing, you know, for the 50, 60 hours a week? What is your family, you know, life, you know, look like? What does your personal life look like? You might be making a big fat paycheck, but what's being sacrificed for that? And again, when you tell people, you introduce that idea of, you know, you can work less and make more, that just tells me that people have to shift that belief. There's a belief system there where they don't even think that it's possible to do that. Or they think, well, okay, maybe you could do it, but there's no way that I could do that. And I look at it this way, the time that we're living in now with technology, I mean, anybody can start a side hustle, a side business, strike out on their own, do something, find another way to make income. Years ago, I can see where it could be really challenging. If I needed extra money, what would I do? I go get it. I used to work two jobs. I worked a full-time job and I worked a part-time job. Or I was going to school full-time and working full-time. Like that was me. And I think early in life, there's a time and a place for that when you're building yourself up. But as you advance in life, you have to sit, like you say, the next day isn't guaranteed. Like my one friend, her parents were tired. They were planning on traveling. They had prepared for that. She got diagnosed with cancer and passed away within months of retiring. They never got to do that together. So when you don't have tomorrow guaranteed for anyone, it's like, what's that balance of, you know, what do I put my, you know, resources into today versus preparing for the future? It's like, we don't know what tomorrow will bring. And so for me, it's just about simplifying, you know, my life and creating those streams of passive income. And it's possible. Medical coding has so much opportunity in it, you know, for people to earn, you know, money. And like, I know you, I tell people all the time, you need to watch Victoria's video on the six-figure medical coder. That's one I always recommend because people don't think that's possible. or when newer professionals come in and they're complaining about the low salary that they're getting, like entry level. And I'm like, I understand that that's the issue in the beginning, but you need to look at the potential of this career. And the podcast episode that just dropped today is called Show Me the Money, where I was interviewing Christine Hall. And we talk about, you know, starting out and working your way up and making more money. But it, the possibilities, I feel, are endless. We are in such a great field and growing field. And I feel like COVID actually pushed a lot of people in a new direction, where you've seen a lot of people start their own business, start their own side hustle, walk away, you know, from the jobs. It's like when you look at the, I don't like to get political on podcasts, but when you look at, you know, issues in the economy and they talk about the shortage of workers, well, there's a lot of reasons why we have the shortage of workers. A lot of people took early retirement. They're like, I'm done, rat race, life is short, I'm going to go take my early retirement. Millions of people. Then you have people who left that rat race to start their own thing. I've seen that clearly on social media. You have been, you were already planning to do YouTube, but it was COVID that gave you the time to actually push that forward. And now look at where you're at in such a short amount of time with that income coming in from the affiliate links, from the monetization. I mean, that's amazing in a year and a half to be at that point. So it is absolutely possible. And I feel like everybody has something to talk about and teach others. Like, you have to find your tribe and then just pursue it. And maybe you're a medical coder and you don't want to teach medical coding, but you have knowledge and expertise in something else for a side hustle, where you want to get out there and create content and help people, whatever, you know. Like, someone told me years ago, because I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready to help people, I don't know if I can step out and do this. And she said to me, you only have to be one step ahead of the person behind you to be able to help them. So what you have to share is valuable to someone, for those people who haven't achieved what you have. So look at it that way. And I'm like, wow, that was like so profound to me, that you don't have to be this top-notch expert to go out and start sharing with people. You can start simple and just share what you know and then build on it. And then you gain more confidence, and then you continue to learn more there. So do you have anything else that you want to add to that? That's always, that's a topic I'm so passionate about, convincing people. You don't have to kill yourself to make money. There is a better way. I promise you there's a better way.
Yeah, there's a great person I follow. His name is Roberto Blake. And he talks about passive income, or as he likes to call it, automated income. Mm-hmm. And one of the concepts that he talks about that kind of struck with me is, he's like, you do a short-term hustle for a long-term gain. So you do all the work up front, you bust your butt, you work late, you create something amazing. And then once it goes, you don't have a lot of maintenance on it. You still have maintenance on it, but it's not the 40-hour work week that it used to be, because you did all the work up front. I feel though, like now I'm at this point where I've been in my era of hustle for a decade now. And I'm kind of like, I'm tired of it. I've done enough work. Now I'm going to work at a bit of a slower pace. And it's tough sometimes, because I've, even as I've progressed through this quote unquote celebrity status, some of the prominent figures in the industry that I know used to support me, and I used to get the comments and I used to get the thumbs up and the likes from, have gone like radio silent. So there's that little thought in the back of my mind, like, are they thinking ill of me now? And you know what? I don't care anymore. I don't care. Because I go to bed feeling very competent, very confident about what I've done and what I've accomplished, and good about it. So if they think I'm doing something otherwise, that's their issue and not mine.
Yeah. I mean, in situations like that, it's probably an issue with them. There are a lot of people who, if they're not happy where they're at, where, you know, in their life at that moment, and they see someone else succeeding in an area, I mean, there's just jealousy there a lot of times over what other people are accomplishing, so it's a reflection on them. It's not a reflection of you. And, you know, being a content creator, like a speaker, you know, I've been doing speaking now for like over 20 years, and even speaking at a conference, like, you read the evaluations that you get, like, from the audience. And when I first started, like, out, like, I could read the evaluations, and like, if there were 100 people in the room, 99 could say I was the best thing that they've ever seen. Mm-hmm. There would be one person out of the 100 that would have something nasty or negative to say that would really eat at me and like stick in my head. And then the longer you're at it, you have to learn. If somebody has a constructive criticism, I appreciate it and I take it. You know, I'm at that level now. But certain people are just absolutely miserable and they will just pass comments that really have nothing even to do with your content. Sometimes they just for whatever reason. So you have to learn to let that roll off your back. Even, you know, with doing the podcast now, I'm putting more of myself, you know, out to the public. People know the professional me. They don't really hear about my personal life and I'm very unfiltered and I kind of say things and I'm like, one day I'm probably going to step in it and I'm probably going to have people come for me. And I have to be prepared for that. You have to have a thick skin, as you know. I mean, I'm sure most of your comments are positive, but every once in a while, you probably get some that leave you scratching your head. Like, really? Like, how? Where did that come from? And why did you even say such a thing?
Yeah, people comment things all the time. And I'm like, why did you even waste your time? Because I'm just going to delete this and now it's gone forever.
Right. That's what's nice about social media is you can delete and you can block and you can ban people if they're really obnoxious. You know, there, so this was kind of like a funny story. So this was years ago. This was a local HIM meeting that I was at. Speaking of like negative comments, I wasn't a speaker at the meeting, but there was this woman who was there speaking and it was a motivational topic. And she was that happy, cheerful person who's so full of energy and she's so positive. Like, you know, no matter what you could, if you pissed in her cornflakes, she would find something good about it. Okay. That was just her personality. And she was amazing. Now I'm not like that. Okay. I will never be like that. That is not my default setting. It's just not going to happen. So when I see somebody like that, I'm in awe of that because I'm like, I would like to be that, but I'm not that by nature. On the evaluations, somebody had wrote, she needs to lose the Pollyanna attitude. That was what was on the evaluations. And that made me laugh. And I'm like, okay, are you that miserable that you had to make a comment about her Pollyanna? And I'm like, okay, she kind of does have a Pollyanna attitude. I get it. But I'm like, what place does that have on an evaluation? Right. It doesn't. It's not constructive. So I, whenever I get a negative comment, I think back to that about the Pollyanna attitude. I'm like, but she was the sweetest lady. How can you say anything like negative about her? But they're all out there. I've encountered them and I know there will be more. So it is what it is. So I want to ask you one more question about YouTube before we move on to some other topics. So as a content creator, what is your biggest challenge or frustration that you have?
Oh, so there's two. I would say number one is I'll see new creators come in and I can tell just by what they're doing is that they're in it for the money. That's it. Mm-hmm. That it's just, I made this. You can buy my thing. You can buy my thing, buy my thing. Here's my affiliate link, buy my thing. Nothing of great value. That's more so focused on, I just want to sell you something.
Right.
The second one is I've had to get over a lot of frustration and it took me a long time and figuring out how I was going to handle it, but dealing with other people coming into the space and creating pieces of materials that look suspiciously like mine, like a thumbnail that looks like something I recently created or a content idea. I had one person take the timestamps, the descriptions of the timestamps that I had in one of my videos and copy and paste them, tweak them a little bit and post them as something else in one of their pieces of content. The eking mentality in my mind has been very toxic to me where I'll see something and I'll be like, oh, well, they just copied me. Why are they copying me? You know, they need to stop. Or I'll see something and it's a different audience than I am. So I'll look at it and I'll be like, ugh, like, what is this? And I'm not the target audience. So obviously I'm going to have that reaction. They are targeting a different type of audience than I am, which is fine. They're allowed to. But I see that and I'm like, who the heck is this? And what the heck are they doing? And I know that's bad. I know it's a mindset shift that I have to make. So after a while of doing it, I really had to come to terms with the fact of this is just how it's going to be. People might catch on to some of the similar content that's being made to mine. It might be completely incidental. So it just is what it is. I'm not going to worry about it unless someone's literally copying line for line, word for word, what I'm doing. There's going to be similarities to be between what I do and other people do. And to nitpick about who took who and what did what, and they took my style of how I design things, or they made a thumbnail that looks like one of my thumbnails. It's just going to upset me more than anything, which is part of the reason that I don't watch a lot of other content of what creators are making. And how you just kind of described the Pollyanna person, I know that there's people out there that, like, everyone in the medical coding world is their friend and their bestie, and they love them and they support everyone. And I'm like, I wish I could be that person, but I'm not. I see some of the people that I know are doing kind of not entirely great things. And I wish I could support people, but, you know, I'm not the target audience for everyone. So they're going to make very different content than I make. You know, there, I've seen people out there that they talk about, you know, I was actually, someone came at me in one of their videos. I don't want to say who or what or why, but they were like, oh yeah, and this other YouTuber said blah, 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 blah. And I knew they were talking about me. And I'm like, I'm done. I'm not watching this video anymore. Clipped out of it. And that was when I'm like, you know what? I'm just not going to watch what other people are making anymore, because it's just upsetting me. And it's not fair to me. It's not fair to them that I would cast judgment on them. So in order to take myself out of that, I'm just not going to watch a lot of it. I still like podcasts a lot. I still listen to, like, Brian and Tony and Sonal Patel and some of the other people that yours and some of the other people that have come up. But it's been a big frustration of mine. It's something that I used to have to go and talk to my people in my mastermind probably got sick of hearing me, because I'm like, look at this and look at this. Doesn't this look similar to you? Doesn't this look kind of suspicious, like the thing that I made? So now for my own kind of mental clarity, I've just come to terms with it. And just kind of trying to steer clear of it wherever I can.
Yeah, I found you just have to shut out, you know, that noise. I mean, obviously I do, you know, a lot of content as well. I've put out a lot of content over the years, and you can kind of see similarities in things and you kind of question things. But I just figure, you know, if you are, people want to duplicate or imitate because they see the success that you've had. That's why they do it. They figure, oh, if it worked for you, they can do the same thing. They'll modify it a little bit to try to camouflage the fact that they're copying you, but they're copying you. And it happens, but it's not authentic when it comes from them. And if you already have such a large following and then they see that, your people, your tribe, they're going to know, they're going to recognize that. And they're not going to appreciate someone doing that. Mm-hmm. If you already have them, you know, and they trust you and they value your content. So I feel that people who try to do that, they're not doing themselves like any favors. I don't feel that they will ever be successful. I think it's rare that people are successful when they rip people off. Now, there are occasions where people get ripped off and they make a lot of money. Then if we're talking a lot of money, I'm going to sue you. If you're making a lot of money and trusting me money, I'm going to get an attorney and we're going to have a conversation. But beyond that, if it's not affecting me monetarily, you know, then I completely wouldn't worry about it. But so I'm going to share a funny story before we move on to other questions and talking about copying people. So this was the most bizarre thing I ever had happened to me as far as being copied. And this was probably, I don't know, maybe 16, 17 years ago, this would have happened roughly, maybe not quite that long. And there was someone who had a reputation for basically copying other people's, like, work. Like, they would produce content and people would share things freely with each other, but then she would take it and she would represented as her own. And I knew people who had had this interaction with her. Well, this particular person, one day, this was years ago with AHIMA when they had the communities of practice, for those of you who are AHIMA members. And for those of you who weren't, simply, it was an online community where you could be a member of different groups, you know, depending upon your interest. And I had a radiology coding group, and there were other groups I was a member of. And within the communities, you could have a professional bio and your picture uploaded there. There, this professional, I use that term loosely, professional, this person took my bio, copied and copy paste my bio and put it as her bio. The only difference was the credentials, because we didn't have the same credentials. It was verbatim, didn't change the words and didn't even change the font that I had used and put it on there as her own. And when I saw that, I said, are you kidding me that somebody would ever be so brazen? And then I had to go to AHIMA and report that. And then they're like, well, we'll ask her to modify it. Do you want to pursue this? Because I could have gone down the ethics, you know, path there and, you know, filed a complaint and taken it through. The reason why I didn't, when I went to look at what you have to do to file a complaint against someone, it was like a long drawn out legal proceeding, like, believe it or not, with the paperwork and the steps you had to go through. And I said, even though this person did me wrong, like way wrong here in the grand scheme of things, do I want to waste my time and energy going after this person? Like, do I want to give her any, you know, of that at all? I don't want to waste my time. And then she tried to disparage me in a public forum. And when she did that, boy, did I really go at her in the public forum. And basically, this is what I said. Even then, I shielded her to a certain degree. I said, you're lucky I'm much too much of a professional to talk about what you've done to me or something to that effect. And after that, she left me alone. But it's like, don't mess, because you can only push me so far. But even in a situation where you feel that you've been wronged, and I've had a lot of them, the best thing you can do for yourself is just let it go and like move on. Don't let people take up that space in your head. It's just not worth it. And the older I get, the easier I let things go. Things I used to flip out about, I'm like, yeah, whatever. You know, I just like move on with my day and I don't give it a second thought. And you've obviously learned that too, especially when you're in the public eye. Mm-hmm. And you are that, you know, creator, and you have people from all over the world like watching you, and we never know who's watching us. That's the thing when you're online, you don't know who's looking. And, you know, there are people who are very bold and will post. It's that anonymity. They feel like, oh, I'm anonymous because I'm behind a computer. They say things online they would never say to a person's face. Yeah. And so they just feel like that protection there. And it's sad. And I've had to block and ban people on social media because of comments that they post, and people who aren't even in the medical coding profession, just trolls who will come over and make a nasty comment. I mean, I've been called a fat bitch and, you know, things like that. I'm like, you don't even know me and you're not even in the profession. Why are you over here on my page? So you've got a lot of that stuff that comes out. Pardon my language, but that's what someone called me on social media. So you have to have a thick skin and just realize there are people out there that are going to hate and they're miserable and they want to make other people miserable and move on with your life. So now that we've discussed, you know, all of the questions I had for you about becoming a YouTube celebrity, yes, you are. Anytime I talk about you, I'm going to use that hashtag now, celebrity coder. Definitely going to use that. It's like a given. I'm going to designate that to you. I want to ask some questions about, you know, your career. And I like to ask the different guests questions about their career and lessons that they've learned, because I feel that it's a benefit to the listeners. Because we all have slightly different experiences and lessons that we can share, you know, with the audience. So the first thing I want to ask you is, what is the most important lesson that you've learned in your career?
I think the most important lesson that I've learned in my career is to just be really extra in everything that I do. Like, if it sounds like it's a little bit weird because no one else is doing it, be that trailblazer, go out there and try it. You know, if you want to put the funny joke into your presentation, if you want to talk to your physician who, you know, has a little bit more of a sense of humor with your sense of humor, they'll probably mm-hmm. appreciate that more, maybe even connect with you more. Don't be worried about how your fellow coders are going to look at you or view you. If you want to get that extra certification, you want to get that extra credential, you want to do that thing that everyone's like, well, why are you doing that? You're not going to get any extra money. You know, go ahead and do it. Go and be extra about it, because that's how I built my career. I took the projects mm-hmm. no one else wanted to do, and I was like super enthusiastic, over the top about them. I put together the presentations that had the bells and whistles in them, and had the backup plan for when the bells and whistles didn't work. Mm-hmm. And I presented with enthusiasm, where a lot of people would come up to these presentations and be like, all right, I know it's Monday and we don't really want to be here, so I'm just going to try and get through these slides. I'm like, hey, everyone, I'm Victoria. I'm a medical coder and I'm here to talk to you today about blah, 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 blah. And I tell a funny story about my life or my kid or something and get everyone laughing. So people remembered that. And mm-hmm. now it's funny because they're like, they hear about me on YouTube from other people and they're like, oh yeah, Victoria, I used to work with her back in the day and blah, blah, blah. Actually, one of my biggest thoughts in the back of my mind is every time I have someone who is like a bad boss or someone that I don't like, I'm like, I hope to God that like they still have to hear my name. Like the current coding is fantastic. And every time they hear it, that it like, you know, grinds their gears still a little bit more.
Yeah. That's always great when you have achieved like so much in your career and you think back to the people who tried to throw obstacles in your path and stand in your way and make your life miserable. And then you've had this really high degree of success. Like I've felt this too, where I look back and I'm like, yeah, okay, you thought you were going to keep me down and keep me back from doing. No, look where I'm at now, look where you're at. And yeah. And so I like seeing those people, or I like knowing that those people know about me and see me like everywhere. I think that's like so awesome when that happens. So I can relate to that. So you mentioned humor. Now, this is something that I struggle with because coding is like not humorous. So how do I introduce humor into presentations? Now, what I have found with humor is my sense of humor isn't necessarily the sense of humor of other people in the room. And that's where I have to be very careful. And there are times I will crack jokes and the room is silent. There's like not one laugh. And that makes me super uncomfortable. Then there are times I crack a joke and I think, okay, I probably shouldn't have gone there. I probably should have used that filter. I should have let it kick in before I say it. And I've seen other people fail, you know, with humor as well, where audiences become offended, like with humor, innocent, you know, kind of things. I feel like in our profession, we have a lot of, you know, uptight people in it. It's just like my observation. So I tend to be more, I don't know, more serious in my presentations. I can remember years ago, this was at a Florida meeting. We had a physician speak and he used to speak every year. And then one year he put this cartoon into his PowerPoint. Now he was known for doing funny stuff. And this cartoon was, if I remember correctly, it was like of a woman like trying on like a thong, but it was a thong like on her foot, but like a thong bathing suit bottom. Mm-hmm. And it offended people in the audience. People complained about it. And then he was not invited back to speak from what I can remember, like after that. Wow. Seriously? Yeah. So, now me, that's kind of my sense of humor. I thought it was funny. It like didn't offend me, but that's, and again, I feel like my life is boring. Like you say, you share funny stories from your life, stories that I would share. Again, they might be a little off color. So, I mean, how do you find that balance in what you share, you know, like with humor, I guess is my question.
Yeah, it's definitely a delicate line to kind of toe as far as the humor.
Especially these days, everybody's offended about everything. It's like a very hard thing to work humor into stuff. So tell me your expert tips. What do you got?
Yeah. That's, I struggle with that too, because I'm probably a lot like you. I don't like extremism of any kind. I'm very like, there's both parties of any sections of whatever you're looking at. Extremism is not, I'm very like moderate. Like it's topical to me. So I think, you know, you have to be very delicate about how you're going across things. And it's a struggle, I think, in our realm, because you don't want to make fun of anyone's condition or make fun of a medical malady. But some of the jokes that are out there, like that other people make, I'm like, that's not really that funny. And I want to have something that's funny. Like you can only hear the funny accident, ICD-10-CM codes so many times before, right. Like, yeah, struck by a turtle. Okay, yeah, I get it. That's hysterical. I think if you're just being kind of genuine and inflecting your personality in it, like I sometimes will tell flat out stories about what a hot mess I am. And that, you know, even just on my general social media, posting things about how I was going to work one day when I was working as a supervisor, and I had to put a sticky note onto my steering wheel to remind me that it was one of my employees' birthdays and to not forget to bring the cake along. And that was the only way I was going to not forget it, was by putting a sticky note onto my actual steering wheel so I would see it while I got into the car. You know, that, I think that's part of the reason too, that I'm interested in starting the secondary channel where I just talk about business, because I don't want to make it sound like I'm censoring myself in any way, but I'm presenting myself in the way that's appropriate for the medical coding channel. Right. In real life, I'm probably Tony L. Holmes says I'm like the Gary Vaynerchuk of medical coding, and he's from Jersey. Jersey and Philly are kind of like that same kind of vibe. Like I curse a lot. I'm very outlandish. I will make jokes and crack jokes all the time that would not be appropriate for a medical coding channel, because that's one of my big fears, is that someone's not going to like something I do and they're going to go, well, Victoria, I'm reporting you to the ethics committee because I don't like blah, 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 blah. And that's a very sensitive thing for this particular industry, that someone can do that to you, that I don't think we have that in a lot of other industries, or not as sensitive maybe in other industries. So it's a tough line to toe. And I think in my case, I find it a little bit easier because I am a little bit less inhibited, that I don't have those messages in my mind telling me, Victoria, you probably should not put on the pirate costume and talk about how to code for scurvy. Like, this is going to be fun. And someone's going to put this in their classroom at one point, and they're going to think that they're the superstar rock star teacher and go them because they shared this piece of content that I made. I think as long as you're not going towards specific touchy subjects, is probably best practice, that you're not going on things like gender issues or talking about conditions or accidents. And it's funny because you don't realize when you're saying them with no malintention that it might upset someone else. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where my problems with some of this cancel culture type stuff comes, is if someone's saying something and there's really no malicious intent behind it, it was just, they weren't informed enough to know that that was not a correct term to use or something. That's different than someone who's intentionally, you know, using your wrong pronouns because they just want to upset you or something.
Exactly.
That's two totally different things. So I think as long as you're being delicate of what you are aware of at that time, that's probably, you know, the best too. And stories really speak to people. So if you can inflict any kind of story of you or someone else you know into that, you know, a lot of people will think you're smarter than you are if you can tell a humorous story. Like, that humor has that instinct in it that when you are attracted to someone because they're very humorous, you tend to be more inclined to think, oh, they're probably really smart too, which is obviously the case in my stance, because people come at me and they're like, Victoria, would you like to be the director of the charge master for our organization because you're so smart? I'm like, no, absolutely not. I would not like to do that. You take me for someone who knows a lot more about a lot of things than I actually know about.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, again, humor is just so subjective. That's where it's a little bit of a challenge. But this is why I like this podcast, because you're seeing the authentic version of me in my podcast, where for the most part in the podcast, I'm speaking unfiltered. For the most part, there's still the filter in my head that stops me from saying certain things on the podcast, which is a good thing. Or what's great about this is recording. Then when you go back, you can edit things out. Maybe I shouldn't have said it. It's sometimes how you say something. And then when you go back and listen to it, you're like, I could have said that, you know, in a better, you know, way, so it doesn't get misconstrued. But I'll just share. So this is a funny example of me using my filter. Okay. And this will make the audience like laugh. So some people who listen know that I am like obsessed with shoes. I have like this major shoe collection, and I have all these bling bling shoes that I wear like all the time. And whenever I go to a conference, particularly the annual Florida Health Information Management Association conference, every year, everybody wants to look at my shoes. So this year I had on these platform bling shoes. They're all blinged out. They're platform high heels. And the first day of the keynote is there, and he's bringing people up to, you know, help him out with his keynote. And so I jump up to like help him. And then he's commenting on the shoes. Wow, look at those shoes. And everybody's looking at the shoes. And then I sit down, and then later I get back up and help him with something again. And he's like, that reminds me of like Dorothy, like in The Wizard of Oz. And I almost said, but did not, actually, it reminds me of a stripper pole. But I slapped myself before I said it, okay? Because I'm in the keynote room, like in front of the audience. So after we got done, because they are my stripper heels. That's what they look like. They look like stripper heels. It just is what it is. Let's call it what it looks like. It's something you would see in a strip club. And so afterwards, I mentioned it to a few board members. I'm like, oh, when he said this, this was the thought I had in my head. And the one person said, I am so glad you didn't say that. I could think of three people in the room who would have been offended and had a problem with it. And I'm like, seriously? Seriously. But the reason why I was filtered is because earlier when I was joking with him about hugging the single girl, people didn't laugh over that. So I knew they couldn't handle the stripper pole comment. So I shut it down. So anyway, so that just reminded me of that. So again, know your audience. You know, if the one joke didn't quite land and didn't get laughs, if you take it up a notch, it's definitely not going to work. It's the same audience who banned the doctor after the cartoon, like, by the way.
Yeah. So every now and then it's like, this joke is just so good that I know one or two people aren't going to like it, but I got to say it anyway.
Go there anyway, right? So yeah, so in my podcast, I can do that. When you're in that audience and I'm on the board too, that's the thing. I'm a board member. You got a board member up there making a comment, you know, like that. You kind of, again, the filter kicked in and I didn't say it, but that's what I was thinking. Right. And it made me laugh on the inside. And then when I told people after who know me, they thought it was hilarious because they know me. Like, there was no offense taken by any of my friends. They're like, oh, someone like, you should have said it. I'm like, no, that wouldn't have gone over too well if I had said it. So now I said it on the podcast and everybody knows what I was thinking. So if you were at that meeting, that is what was going through my head during that moment there.
That brings us to the end of part two of my interview with Victoria Moll. Don't forget to mark your calendars for February 22nd for the final part of my interview with Victoria. Before I go, I want to let you know about a couple of exciting offers from RadRx. At RadRx, we have launched monthly subscription-based coding memberships, and we have three membership tiers so you can choose the one that best fits your budget. Whether you have questions you need answered or need to earn continuing education credits, we have options for you. As a Tier 1 member, you will have access to important industry updates, a question and answer database, coding tips, coding and billing articles, interventional and diagnostic radiology case studies, and you are permitted to submit one coding question per month, which will become a part of the Q&A database. We also have the entire NCCI and NCD manuals in searchable format. A Tier 1 membership is $33 a month. As a Tier 2 member, you will have access to all of the above, plus live monthly Q&A sessions and quarterly webinars for continuing education credit. We have one bonus webinar already available for immediate viewing, the 2022 CPT update for interventional and diagnostic radiology. A Tier 2 membership is $99 per month. As a Tier 3 member, you will have access to both Tier 1 and Tier 2 content, plus you may submit 10 cases per month for auditing. Note that Tier 3 is limited to a total of only 12 members. Tier 3 is $399 per month. With any of our options, you also have the ability to pay for 12 months in advance to receive an additional discount. For more information on coding subscriptions, go to radrx.com and click on the Memberships tab. Next, I am joining forces with Christine Hall of Sterling Global Solutions for an amazing two-day virtual event coming up on March 25th and April 1st. March 25th will feature topics for interventional radiology coders, and April 1st will feature topics for diagnostic radiology coders. You do not have to register for both days. You may register for a single day. The event is titled Surviving Medicare's Recovery Room Radiology Edition, Keys for a Successful Operation. The interventional radiology coding sessions include evaluation and management coding today and tomorrow, staying compliant with telehealth today, and covering your assets, reducing risk, and ensuring accurate reimbursement for interventional radiology procedures. The diagnostic radiology sessions consist of May I Take Your Order? Appropriate Use Criteria is Coming, Mastering Medical Necessity and ABNs, Billing Office Diagnostics and Portable Diagnostics, and Covering Your Assets, Reducing Risk, and Ensuring Accurate Reimbursement for Diagnostic Radiology Services. You can find registration information along with a detailed agenda at radrx.com. Simply click on the Education tab, then go to the Webinar tab for more details. As always, I want to thank all of my listeners. If you are loving the podcast and listen on Apple, please take a moment to give the podcast a 5-star rating and leave a review. And of course, as always, please share the podcast with your friends and colleagues. If you have feedback you'd like to share in an episode or topic suggestion, please send an email to podcast@radrx.com. That's podcast@radrx.com.
And I also would still love to start an Ask Stacy segment. So please submit any questions you would like me to answer in a future episode to askstacy@radrx.com. That's Ask Stacy, and that's Stacy spelled S-T-A-C-I-E @radrx.com. Thanks again for tuning in and have an amazing week.
Thank you for listening to Who Cares What Stacy Says? You can connect with Stacy on social media. You can find her business page for RadRx on Facebook, and you can connect with her personally on LinkedIn. Don't forget to check out the online training courses offered by RadRx: Cracking the IR Code, Mastering Interventional Radiology and Cardiology Online Training, or Cracking the Diagnostic Radiology Code Online Training. Thanks again for tuning in to Who Cares What Stacy Says? A podcast providing insights and advice on how to take your medical coding career to the next level.